Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 12, Vritrasura's Glorious Death, Text Number 12. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate anisham ishwaram bhutai shrijati bhutai grasate ani ai svayam. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate nisham ishwaram bhutai shrijati bhutani grasate tani tai svayam. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate nisham ishwaram bhutai shrijati bhutani grasate tani tai svayam. Avidvan evam atmanam manyate nisham ishwaram bhutai shrijati bhutani grasate tani tai svayam. Avidvan, one who is foolish without knowledge, evam thus atmanam himself manyate considers anisham, although totally dependent on others, ishwaram as the supreme controller, independent bhutai by the living entities, shrijati he, the Lord, creates bhutani other living entities, grasate he devours tani them, tai by other living beings, swayam himself. Translation: a foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although always dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. If one thinks, according to one's previous fruit of actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger, this is not proper understanding. The Supreme Personality of God in himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. Purport. According to the conclusion of the philosophy known as Karma Mimamsa, one's karma, or previous fruit of activity, is the cause of everything, and therefore there's no need to work. Those who arrive at this conclusion are foolish. When a father creates a child, he does not do it independently. He is induced to do so by the Supreme Lord. As the Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmitir gyanam apohanang cha. I am in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Unless one receives dictation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits within everyone's heart, one cannot be induced to create anything. Therefore, the father and mother are not the creators of a living entity. According to the living entity's karma, fruit of activities, he is put into the semen of the father, who injects the living entity into the womb of the mother. Then, according to the body of the mother and father, yata yoni, yata bijam, the living entity accepts a body and takes birth to suffer or enjoy. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the original cause of one's birth. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the cause of one's being killed. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent. The true conclusion is that the only independent person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agena Timurandasya Agenanjana Shloka Chakshan Litamana Tazvai Sri Guru Namaha. This chapter is entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death. He's continuing to lecture Indra about who is the only independent one. The circumstances, once again, are that Indra is hesitating in battle. He's meeting with stiff valor and strength coming from Vritrasura. So Vritrasura is urging Indra, come on, don't hesitate, don't be cowardly, don't be morose. It's destined that you kill me, so come on and do it. But I'm going to do my duty at the same time. I'm going to do everything to kill you, even though I know it is the will of Krishna that you kill me. And of course, as we discussed previous days, Vritrasura knew that upon being killed by Indra, he was going back to Godhead. So therefore, he was actually the victor, although he's going to be killed. And Indra, from the material point of view, looks like the victor. He gets to remain the lord of the heavenly planets. But Indra will still be in the material world, although as a victor. And Vritrasura, although seemingly the loser, he goes back to Godhead. So in this way, Vritrasura is the real victor. Indra gets the temporary rewards, which are soon and sure to be vanquished, and Vritrasura gets eternal perfect life with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, particularly Lord Sankarsan and Vaikuntha. This is a great lesson to us. What's the real wealth of life? There are two things we're explaining this past weekend. Kripana and Brahmana. A Brahmana means one who is equipped with knowledge of Brahman, transcendental knowledge. Therefore, a Brahman is wealthy. A Brahmana is wealthy even though living in poverty. In fact, it is said that austerity is the wealth of the Brahmana. And what is a Kripana? A Kripana is just the opposite. One who is a miser, who has no wealth. Actually, the Kripana has wealth, but he refuses to spend it properly. And that's as good as having no wealth. Just like, let's say, you're a businessman, and you have millions in the bank, but you refuse to spend a penny on anything. This is as good as having no wealth. Sometimes stories come out in the news media of some old lady or old man dying in their 80s, and they're living in a tiny flat and with no possessions, and then, you know, upon the death of that old person, the relatives of someone sifts through their belongings and finds a bank statement that the person has millions in the bank. Yes, this happens from time to time. The person just felt some security that I have millions in the bank, but refused to spend it. Sometimes they don't even will it to relatives. This is how it is these days. And sometimes they don't have any caring relatives to will it to, so they will it to their dog. You heard of things like this? Willing millions of dollars to a dog. This is Kali Yuga. So, Kripana means one who has wealth, but actually has no wealth because he or she doesn't know how to spend it. And what is that wealth we have? The human form of life. If we do not use the human form of life for its correct purpose, we are misers. We're wasting that wealth. Now, no one likes to think of themselves as miserly, but that's actually what's going on when we misuse the human body simply for sense gratification and economic development. Vritrasura is actually the winner. He's a great devotee, but he's in the body of a demon. And this is going to be a source of great marvel for Indra. In future verses, Indra's going to be commenting, how is it that you're such a great devotee in the body of a demon? Indra will note Vritrasura's transcendental symptoms. And he can tell, Indra can tell by Vritrasura's teachings that actually, although you have the body of a hideous demon, you are functioning like my spiritual master. You're telling me don't be attached to victory or defeat. Just do my duty on behalf of Krishna. So actually, you're my guru. Now still, Indra, after this realization, went ahead to kill Vritrasura because that is the plan of the Lord. And Vritrasura was not against being killed, although as a Kshatriya, it was his duty to fight and do everything to kill the opposing party. So then Vritrasura was killed, and he went back to Godhead. He's the real victor. The Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth. Now the materialists, they say that means the meek will inherit the earth. That means, yes, they'll be, 1 meter under the earth, buried. That's how they're inherit. That's how meek people inherit the earth. In other words, for the materialists, might makes right. You want to shove your way around and get what you want. So the only way that the meek and humble will get something, the only way they'll inherit the earth is when they're under the earth, buried. But actually, what is the real meek person? What is the real humble person? We've been discussing this. The real meek and humble person is one who understands Ekale Iswar Krishna Asava Britja. There's only one controller, Krishna. Everyone else, they're his servants. Now, do we really feel that we have no independence? Are we just saying that? Do you know what it feels like to have no independence? Just like this child. Wherever she goes, the mother's, on her case. And the child is dependent on the mother. So that's the way we are with Krishna. Yet, because we are in Maya, we're hallucinating that we're just living on our own. This false sense of independence is the great enemy of a living entity. Now, how did this false sense of independence arise? How did you get a material body in the first place? What are you doing in this material world? Haven't you all thought about that? How did I get implicated? How did I get thrown into this ocean of material existence? I'm packed inside this body. This body is undergoing biological phases and changes. I'm harassed by my physiology and my psychology. How did this happen to me? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Stani Karsati, you're stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere. Why is the material atmosphere oppressive? It doesn't go your way. How many of you think the world is going your way? No. If you think you're the body, then the world is definitely not going your way because nature is breaking down your body. But you're so foolish, you think you're expressing yourself. You think the body is meant for your pleasure, when actually the body is meant for your undoing. You don't see what's going on, even though you claim to love nature and you like to be with nature. You don't know what nature is doing. It's breaking down that very body you identify with. Remember the letter we were reading this weekend where the lady writing the letter said, I don't believe in the soul. No one can tell me for sure what's going to happen after death. I'm certain of that no one can tell me for sure. When I die, I'll just mix with the earth, and I'm sure that some or other, my body will go for good purpose. I'll probably be fertilizer for a new breed of plants. The egotism continues even in thinking about death. Oh, I'm so wonderful. I'm so unique. I'm so special. I'm sure that when I die, there'll be some special purpose for me. My body will break down and fertilize a new plant that will benefit humanity. This is how full in ourself we get. Now, where did this problem start? You actually can't trace it out. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Anadi Karma Phale. You can't find the beginning of your implication in material existence because the question goes beyond time. When questions are material questions. A when question is a question within the confines of time and space. That means within the confines of the material world. But the spirit soul is transcendental to the material world. Therefore, you can't ask when questions. Time functions in the material world, but time does not function, it doesn't influence anything outside the material world. So you can't find out when the original point was in which you became implicated in material life. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Anadi, you can't trace out the beginning. Tracing out the beginning means when. And when questions can't be asked on the spiritual platform. You can't apply when to the spirit soul. You can't apply when to Krishna. Time is a potency of Krishna that has its effects in the material world. In the spiritual world, time has no effect. Still, you wonder, if I am the superior energy of Krishna, spirit soul, what am I doing in this material world? I'm superior, the spiritual energy. Why have I surrendered to the inferior energy? How can that be? How can the superior energy come under the influence of the inferior energy? It should be the reverse. What's happening? I'm under the influence of matter. What do they call it here when people are driving with alcohol in their blood? In the space they call it DUI, driving under influence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. So, in material life, we're functioning under the influence of matter. You can pull over all the conditioned souls beside the road and give them a test. They're all, in all their walks of life, they're under the influence of Maya. I am this body. I have to make my way through life. I have to establish myself. I want to create a good future for my children. Let us perpetuate nice material living. I want to live nicely. I want my children to live nicely. They should have children. They will live nicely in this way. I will feel successful. The comforts of home will be there. The profits will be in the bank. My children will provide me with very enjoyable grandchildren. I'll get to see all this expand from me. Wealth, children, grandchildren. I should have some social influence also. I should be recognized as a member of the Lions Club. Or I should be a prominent member of the local Indian Association in Perth. My friends should appreciate my stature, my home, the way I do things, the way I run my business, the way I raise my family, the way my wife obeys me in public. And all these things should be appreciated. And then, because I'm living a nice life, if there is something after death, I'm sure good things will come to me. We're reading in the purport about karma mimamsa philosophy, in which you think that there's no supreme controller. Everything simply revolves around our work, our good deeds. If you do good deeds, good will come to you. It must. There may be God, there may not, but if you do good deeds, good will come to you. Many people, you hear them say that, like a folk belief. Just do good and good will come to you. Now, no one bothers to inquire what is good, because that's up to each one of you. The main thing is just have a desire to do good, and surely the universe will recognize your sincerity. You may recall Krishna speaking this concoction to Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. Krishna had just finished dealing with the yajnik brahmanas and their wives. And now he comes home and he finds that his father, Nanda Maharaj, and the older cowherd men are preparing to do Indra Puja, to worship Lord Indra. So Krishna asks, Krishna is just a young boy. He asks, Father, what's the purpose of this ritual you're performing? Is it just some popular tradition? Is it a Vedic injunction? What's going on? In this way, Krishna is letting you know that you shouldn't perform anything blindly. You should know what the purpose is. So Nanda Maharaj immediately thought, oh, Krishna's just a small boy. Just like if you ask some question, what are they doing here? What is the purpose? Will your parents explain to you? They'll say, oh, she's too young. She just likes to sit on the floor and draw pictures. She wants to crawl under the asana. And she'll never understand important things at this point. So Nanda Maharaj is thinking that. He's thinking like that about his child Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Nanda Maharaj is absorbed in Vatsalya Rasa, parental love of Krishna. He's thinking, Krishna is dependent on me. I must protect him, I must sustain him, I must feed him, otherwise there'll be difficulty. He's not thinking Krishna is the Supreme Lord. This is the way of that ecstasy and pure love of God in a parental love. Just like when Krishna actually does lift Govardhan Hill, Mother Yasoda, she won't accept that Krishna did it. She'll think, actually, somehow that was Nanda Maharaj who did it. She can't accept that her son, her little Krishna, held up Govardhan Hill. Even though she may see it, she doesn't accept. And the cowherd boys, they have fraternal love of Krishna. Satyarasa. So the cowherd boys, they're watching Krishna holding Govardhan Hill, his left hand, and they're saying, Krishna, you're probably tired right now. Just transfer the hill to one of us and we'll hold it while you rest. Because in friendship love of Krishna, you think you're equal with Krishna in terms of strength. There's no difference between you and us. You fight with Krishna, you sport, you play. So the cowherd boys are saying, Krishna, surely you're tired by holding up that hill with one hand. Transfer it to one of us and take a rest. Or else they say, if you can't do that, then just transfer the hill to your right hand so we can massage your left hand. So in this way, they're not thinking that Krishna is all-powerful. They're just thinking Krishna is our most attractive friend. So Krishna's playing as the son of Nanda Maharaj, and he's asking, what's the purpose of this yajna? And Nanda Maharaj is thinking, he's a little boy, he'll never understand. But then Krishna starts to press him, Father, saintly persons never keep any secrets from anyone. So in other words, you should tell me. And then Krishna says, furthermore, if you think that a saintly person, or if you think that, well, I'm not a saintly person, and I have to be practical, I cannot reveal things to everyone, then Krishna says, you should understand that you never keep secrets from family members. So, yeah, on both levels, you should tell me, whether you are thinking of the standard of a saintly person, or you're thinking of the standard of a practical, pragmatic person who has to do dealings in this world. Still, I'm family, so you should tell me. So Nanda Maharaj said, all right, very well. This yajna we perform every year to please Indra, because Indra is so kind, sending rains, and rains are necessary for the grass to grow. When the grass grows, then the cows eat the grass, and all our livelihood is dependent on the cows. So therefore, we want to thank Indra. So then Krishna began to speak word jugglery, because Krishna did not want Indra Puja going on in Vrindavan. Krishna did not want demigod worship going on in Vrindavan. Krishna wanted to establish in Vrindavan that everything should directly go on for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna began to juggle words. What is the need of worshiping Indra? There's no demigods who have influence we should worry about. What we should simply worry about is doing good deeds. And if you do good deeds, automatically a good result comes. Whether there's a demigod or a god in charge, that's not the point. Even if there is a demigod or god in charge, such a controller is forced to give you the good results of your good deeds. So it's the good deeds that are really supreme. So either you take it that the system has no personal administration, or it does have personal administration. Nevertheless, the conclusion is the same. Good deeds automatically bring about good results, whether or not somebody's in control. So just focus on doing good deeds. Just do good karma. And Indra is forced to give the rain. Even if he does exist, even if he does not exist, the rains will come because you're doing good. This is Karma Mimamsa philosophy. It's one of the six Vedic philosophies, Sabdharsan. Of course, we don't follow that philosophy. It does not come from Krishna. But just like in the West, you have various philosophies, existentialism and so many things like that, scientism, materialism. Similarly, in India, there's classical Indian philosophy called Sadarshan. So Karma Mimamsa is one of them. We are, of course, taking Bhagavad Darshan, knowledge of the Supreme Lord, and that is coming directly from the Supreme Lord through disciplined succession. Whereas the five of the six Sadarshans, or six Vedic philosophies, they're coming from great sages or philosophers who are speculating systems of thought. They don't come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Karma Mimamsa is one of those. And Krishna is mimicking that philosophy in order to stop the Indra Puja. One of Krishna's qualities is that he's very eloquent. He can speak very intelligently. Also, he's an expert judge of time, place, and circumstance. So he knows just what to do. He's discouraging Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men from worshipping Indra, from performing the Indra Puja. Sometimes you hear people today speak Karma Mimamsa philosophy in a very crude way. Just do good and good things will happen to you. Don't have to be worried about philosophy. Is there a God in control? Just according to your own standard, be a good person and it'll be all right. When you're eating your meat and having your illicit sex, getting intoxicated and gambling, just have a good desire in your heart. Just want to mean good for everyone. Then it'll all work out. And if there is an afterlife, because you thought good, good will come to you. And maybe there's no afterlife, so it doesn't matter anyway. There's our people there. Vritrasura is making sure Indra understands that there is a supreme controller. Now he's pointing out a very interesting way to realize that there's a supreme controller. He's pointing out that you don't get the impetus to do anything unless the Lord in the heart induces you. Now, this is a very humiliating thought. We think that, well, I thought to do that. I want to do this. It's my creative outburst. It's my idea, my inspiration, my intuition. No. You are so dependent that even your ideas, what to do, they are prompted by the Lord in the heart. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Kadeshe Arjuna Tishtati. Krishna is in everyone's heart, directing your wanderings as you go here and there on your bodily machine. Sarva Shichaham, Kriti Sani Vishto, Matasmitya Gyanam Apovanam Cha. I am in everyone's heart. And from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So when you want to do something, Krishna in the heart has prompted you. You see, you can't even remember your desires. Krishna reminds you of your desires, especially your desires from your past life. Material existence means you die with unfulfilled desires and you get an appropriate body in the next life, and then Krishna reminds you, in your past life you wanted this, now here's your chance. Even you take birth as a pig, Krishna from within the heart as super soul reminds you, you're a little piglet now, you're supposed to suck the nipples of your pig mother, start doing that. Otherwise, how is it that little piglets immediately know what to do when they're born? They know how to suckle. The Lord in the heart is prompting them. You are a pig now. This is what pigs do. Similarly, when you are a human being, Krishna reminds you of your desires from your past life because you forget the shock of birth, of being in the womb, is so great, just like she cannot remember her desires from her past life. So, at the appropriate time, Krishna will remind her. If she had material desires, Krishna will remind her of those. If she had spiritual desires, Krishna will remind her. In your last life, you simply wanted to serve me. Now here's your chance. Right? So, this is how dependent we are. We think, oh, it's my intuition, it's my perception, it's my creative impetus. No. The Lord in the heart reminds you of your desires. We are so tiny, we can't even remember our desires. This is very humbling. Just like if you want to steal. I don't advise this, but you want sinful activity. All right, here's your chance. And if you want to come to Krishna, the Lord in the heart reminds you, you vowed in your previous life to serve me. Now here's your chance. You go to the temple and hear about me. That's what you desire. So if you want to remember Krishna, you're dependent on him. And if you want to forget Krishna, you're dependent on him. Krishna, you need Krishna even to help you forget him. Sometimes people, they say like that, you know, they've been in some very, they've been in a love affair that ends very badly. So, you know, they say, oh, I just want to forget that person. I got to get her out of my mind. I don't want to think about him anymore, what he did to me. I just want to wipe the slate clean. Never think of him again. He just used me. All right, well, you wanted to use him, but he just used me. He abused me. I just wanted some sex, you know, nice sex gratification. What's wrong with that? But he abused me. So, you just tell all your friends, I got to get him out of my mind. Help me, help me. I just want to forget him. When you want to forget Krishna, you need Krishna's help. Otherwise, you can't do it on your own. So from within your heart, Krishna notices your desire. Oh, you want to forget all about me? You want to forget all about Krishna consciousness and plunge deep into material life? All right, I help you. I'll help you become a first-class demon. You'll never know what is Krishna. Sometimes people, they come here. And they take up a little devotional service, which is to their eternal credit. But then they just decide, I just can't get into all this sense control and all this purified living. I just want to get out there and get back into action again. So they actually have a strong desire to want to forget everything they learned during their brief stay here. So Krishna helps. Okay, you want to be a fool again? I'll help you. Forget about me and march back into material life. This is how dependent we are. To remember Krishna, we need his help. And to forget Krishna, we need his help. Sometimes children who grow up in families of devotees, children of devotees, they reach a certain point and they want to rebel. Ah, this Krishna consciousness was our parent. This is the parent's thing. We want to find out what the real world is like. So they actually have to work hard to break away from Krishna consciousness. So Krishna has to help. Everything is induced by the super soul, but Krishna is never to blame. Why? Because it's your desire. The Lord is actually all the time in your heart trying to get you to turn towards him, but you don't listen. Therefore, regretfully, Krishna has to help you fulfill your material desires. That's how you first got into material life. You wanted to imitate Krishna, so the Lord advised you how to become implicated in material life. And in this way, the superior energy comes under the influence of the inferior potency. The example is given. Let's say this little girl here, she's demanding a Moni Bandha. I want the moon. Papa, give me the moon. I want the moon now. Give me the moon. And Moni Bandai tried to tell her, it's not possible, you can't have the moon. Things just don't work like that. But she's screaming and throwing a tantrum, being a total nonsense. I must have the moon! I want the moon! So then the mother has an idea. All right. Now, you don't have to demonstrate. We believe you. The mother has an idea. Okay. I'll give you the moon. I'll have to think of something to keep you from driving us crazy. So I'll give you the moon. The mother gets a mirror, a hand mirror, and the mother catches a reflection of the moon in the hand mirror and then gives it. So here's the moon. Wow, I've got it. I've got the moon. I've done it. I have the moon. So that way, the child fulfills her desires in an illusory way. So this is what Krishna has done for us in the material world. You can't blame Krishna. We demanded an opportunity to imitate God. And against all good advice, we persisted. So Krishna provides this illusory world where you can pretend you are supreme. I'm the enjoyer. I'm the maintainer. I'm the protector. I'm the controller. You will to imitate Krishna. You will to be the enjoyer and controller. And then, as a result of that, Krishna wills that you are implicated in material life. So the first thing is you. You misuse your independence. And then Krishna reciprocates, reluctantly. Now you do have some room to maneuver in. You do have some chance of independence, but do you really want to call this independence? You can choose which room of the prison you'll reside in. Now, is that something to be proud about? Oh, I have free will, I can choose. Yes, you can choose which body you'll get by acting in a certain way. Real choice, however, is to get out of prison. But we're so crazy, we become very captivated by our choices in prison. I think I'll try solitary confinement this time. I think I'll try this cell. Oh, this one has TV. I think I'll try another cell. It's closer to the ladies' prison. In this way, you think these are real choices. When actually the real choice is to get out of prison. So material life means to become enamored by limited false choices. Still, there's independence there, but it's very silly use, very tragic use of independence. Real use of independence means to choose to get out of a material prison. And Krishna consciousness is meant to stimulate that real choice, that real use of independence. So any questions? Do you have any questions?
I was wondering, what was the translation for the word mamsa?
I'm not a Sanskritist. Any other questions? So please think about this point, because Vritrasara is making it in several verses. We are totally dependent. We are not independent. This is a hard thing to get out of our system. Especially when you're in your 20s, you just feel the world is out there waiting for me. What shall I do? Shall I learn how to play guitar? Shall I learn sailing? Or hang gliding? Or parachuting? Bungee jumping? Should I go to this club or that club, this concert or that concert? I think I'll get a little job, get some pocket change, and then be able to have further choices. This is a hallucination. And then sooner or later you settle down. Material nature just works that way. You feel like settling down. Just like I know one in New Zealand, I know one young lady, she's 27, so she just came back from a tour of Europe. Now I feel like settling down and having a stable family. Now I feel like nesting. So I said, oh, so what? You feel that way, that's great. But don't you understand material nature goes its own way? 2 years ago you wanted to go traveling. Now you think, oh, I want to nest. So it's all supposed to happen just like that, huh? How was your traveling experience? Oh, there was a lot of bad times. But when you went traveling, you wanted good times. Similarly, now you come back from traveling and you think, oh, I'm 27, now it's time to nest. Okay, Mitchell Major, bring it to me. Bring Mr. Wright to me, because I feel like nesting. It works just like that, you know? Press up. These are our false expectations. We think material nature is going to perfectly supply us, perfectly fulfill our desires. Well, now I feel like doing this. I feel like traveling. So there'll be good times in store for me. Well, I feel like educating myself. So there'll be fulfilling education for me. You may desire, that's all right, but your desires are fulfilled according to Krishna's direction. Just like husband and wife may desire a child, and they may go through all the proper procedures to have a child, but it's Krishna who decides whether a spirit soul actually takes birth in the family or whether it's not possible. So this disease of feeling independent, this is our great enemy. The more we can understand how bound we are, how limited our choices are, the more sane we'll become. That's why I like to ask people, what do you see is going to happen to your life? What do the next 30 years look like to you? What does it look like you'll be 30 years from now? I ask them that to try to get them to see that there's no real options. It's just going to be the same old thing. I need money, I need food, I need shelter, I need sense gratification. And so these basic things, you try to get in many varieties. It's all the same thing, though. No one reveals this secret, that it's always the same thing. The old people don't tell the children this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Acharya, gives this example. Material happiness is like falling in a salt mine. Wherever you taste, it's just salty. Similarly, no matter what happens to you in material existence, whether you call it material happiness or material distress, you're just tasting the same thing. You can see yourself. You've stumbled into a salt mine. Wherever you stick your tongue out, you taste salt. But you hallucinate. Ah, this is different salt. This is happy salt. This is sad salt. This is all salt. So to live material life means you have to be empowered to hallucinate, seeing varieties where there is none. It's like travelers. Well, I'm tired of living in England. I think I'll go to Australia. Now there I will blossom. There I will experience. Now what do they do in Australia that's different from England?
Well, they get a lot colder and wetter. They get a lot colder and wetter.
But there's weather in England, there's weather in Australia. It's still, you're dealing with weather, you're dealing with nature. What's the real difference? You know the example Prabhupada gave about the wet cow dung and the dry cow dung?
I had it the other day and I've forgotten.
I forgot already. Under the influence of material nature, you forgot. You can't even remember what you heard the other day. And we're thinking, oh, I am independent. So, yeah, it's embarrassing. Dry cow dung, you know, in India, they take cow dung and they dry it outside their houses, and then they, when it's dry, they store it so it can be used as fuel for the fire. So once the wet cow dung was laughing at the dry cow dung. Oh, you're so dry, but I'm nice and wet and moist. you're just old, withered, dry cow dung. I'm very fresh. you know, cow dung. But the wet cow dung doesn't know that very soon it will be dry and also be thrown in the fire, just like the dry cow dung. So we see differences. Oh, Australia that has more sunshine. England has less sunshine. It's like wet cow dung, dry cow dung. Everybody in Australia or England, they die. They get old. They experience frustration. Why do the kids commit suicide in Australia if it's really the lucky country? Why are they becoming so addicted to heroin? Even wealthy families have their children being addicted to heroin. Why? The weather is so nice. Why? So then what are the real differences between life in England and life in Australia? What do they really do differently here?
It's just more relaxed, more peaceful. Not generally, it's just a bit more rat race in England.
No, they don't. The rats don't race here?
Yeah. I just find it more relaxing here.
And, alright, it's more relaxing. So, you're relaxing. Alright, now what? Here you're relaxing, supposedly.
Generally, I wouldn't be able to find what in life. I could not find a sense of enjoyment in any level where I'm because it's just a hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
I came over here before I met Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm human.
Okay, now?
I'm learning more about it.
That's very good.
I'll have to go back to England.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to do the same
thing? Hmm. Okay, we accept that answer. Otherwise, there's no difference.
No. If you're here or there, you're still in the same place.
Yes. Okay. Trying to taste pleasure in material existence. Huh? Any questions? Hare Krishna. Anyone who speak today, just let me know. We'll be leaving early tomorrow morning, very early. I think I'll leave after breakfast. Hare Krishna. No, you're not going there.
Nothing you have to say.